7, contact tower 128.15.
Caution, caution. Manual, fuel, manual, fuel.
I'm John Golia.
I'm Greg Fife.
And I'm Todd Curtis.
And we are the Flight Safety Detectives.
Between us, we have over a century of aviation accident investigation and safety experience to draw on as we discuss issues that affect all of us.
So we are qualified to share our perspectives on accidents and incidents and what can be learned from them for the future.
We're proud to say that we have two sponsors that really relate to the topic of aviation safety: the Professional Aviation Maintenance Association, or PAMA, and Avemco Insurance. Later on in the show, we'll tell you how you can get a 5% discount on your insurance just for listening to the show.
We don't just dissect the official reports. In every episode, we identify safety issues and take the mystery out of accident investigations.
So maybe pilots and their planes can have safer flights ahead. Well, hello, Todd.
Hello, John.
How are you today?
Not bad at all. And I'm especially good because with Greg not here, we can do whatever we want.
Well, the cat's away, the mice will play.
Indeed. And we'll go hog wild and go away and do a maintenance-related accident today.
Yep. Well, this is a big week for me and for you, actually.
Indeed.
We're off to the ceremony for the National Aviation Hall of Fame, which somehow I managed to get enshrined, which is truly amazing. But in any event, we'll have a good time.
One side comment, it might be truly amazing, but it's not unexpected given your lifetime of service to the aviation community and the innovations you're doing even as we speak right now. Come on, how many Hall of Famers started podcasts in the last few years after being in the business for 50 years? I can think of one person. Heck of a guy, too.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm just doing what any mechanic or any aviation person who loves aviation does. I mean, you do anything and everything in aviation. Any event, we'll have a good time. It's a good social event. But today we want to help pilots maybe not do things that they shouldn't do. Today we have an accident that involves a pilot that lost all judgment. I mean, this guy's an experienced pilot and owned his own twin-engine airplane. And even with people telling him not to do what he did it. You know, sometimes you show up at the airport to fly, and it impacts your decision-making because you want to fly. And you get a piece of equipment that shouldn't be in the air, but you want to fly. And you make all the excuses you can to take it into the air. And sometimes you paid a price for that. And in this case, several people paid the price for it. So you found this one, so I'll let you do the intro.
Well, before I do the intro, I want to tell our potential sponsors out there that this episode of the Flight Safety Detectives is made possible by sponsors who believe in safer skies. If your business serves pilots, crews, or anyone in the aviation industry, let's talk. Sponsorship puts your brand in front of engaged listeners and helps us keep bringing you stories and insights that make aviation safer for everyone. Email us today at fsdsponsors@gmail.com. And we can get started on doing something with your company and this podcast. But for now, we will go right back to the accident.
Wait a minute. You know what? I'd like to say a comment about one of our sponsors, right? Avemco Insurance. They are such a different breed of insurance. And I'm talking about my own experiences and what I've seen. They are so different than everyone else. When you call them, the person on the other end of the phone is a pilot. And if they didn't start life as pilots, they sit in the simulator and understand what's going on. I visited that facility, and I'm totally amazed at what they do, the knowledge that they have. And they support all kinds of efforts to keep pilots safe. So it's just, they deserve a high five for what they do. And with that, let's go right to the message.
Very good. By the way, I'm an Avemco customer as well, so I can vouch for everything that you've said. But this accident happened just over a year ago, July 19, 2024, in Vienna Center, Ohio. There was a Beach Duke that was traveling from Plattsburgh, New York, and upstate New York, traveling to John Glenn Airport at Columbus, Ohio. And during the flight, the pilot experienced some problem with his engines and diverted to a landing elsewhere. Unfortunately, the pilot was not able to land the aircraft, crashed, and unfortunately expired. But the problem didn't happen on that flight. In fact, it was a fairly good day. The pilot did not have an instrument rating. And I thought, wow, someone flying from Plattsburgh to Columbus, you know, how was the weather that day? Turns out it was a beautiful day for flying. So that was not the issue. And the aircraft itself, unfortunately, I think that was part of the issue. And why was it part of the issue? The aircraft had some maintenance issues, ongoing maintenance issues, deferred maintenance issues, which led to a loss of engine power and a loss of control, according to the NTSB. But that was just the end of the story. The beginning of the story goes back much further. This pilot had purchased the airplane roughly a year before, had had a annual inspection shortly before he flew back on this aircraft. But there were things about the last maintenance that was done on this aircraft that called into question whether or not this was airworthy. In fact, this person had a friend who was also a pilot who he'd asked to fly this airplane for him. And the person reviewed the records of the aircraft, looked at the aircraft, and refused to do so because there were a variety of deferred maintenance items and a variety of other things that made this other pilot, believe that this was an unairworthy aircraft. And he implored his friend to go get this airplane checked out and properly set up before he flew it. As we've seen all too often, this person was in a hurry to get from point A to point B, didn't do those deferred maintenance items. And there were a whole litany of things that the NTSB found after the fact that painted a picture of this aircraft should not have been flying.
You know, guys buy airplanes, and sometimes those airplanes have been sitting for a long time. I have a daughter that lives up in Maine, and I go up there, and I'm a person that when I see a little sign driving that has the airport sign to it, I'll turn off the road and go to the airport and see what it is and look at the airplanes on the airport. I love grass strips. That's what I learned to fly on. So I really love these little airports, upstate New York, New Hampshire, Vermont, Maine. So anyway, I'm always pulling over. I see airplanes that have been sitting idle for years because my daughter's lived in Maine for over 20 years. And when I go up there and that's one particular airport, this airplane's been sitting forever. I just can't imagine anybody flying that airplane without doing a major, major tear down of the fuel system, a full inspection on the engine, and with a substantial runtime, you know, oil, fuel. Fuel contamination is not just water. The fuel system, fuel disintegrates fuel filters. The very first day, first hearing that I attended at the NTSB involved a helicopter that crashed in Massachusetts. And it was the same thing, fuel filters that were disintegrated by fuel and clogged the fuel system, the injectors. So it's just why people do it is just beyond me. And when their friends tell them, try to caution them and they ignore it. I mean, it's a tragic loss because of people, other things in their life get in their way of good decision-making. But I digress. I'll let you carry on.
Well, there were risk factors here that were fairly obvious to anyone who was familiar with this aircraft. But one of them being the aircraft was actually outside in the wintertime in upstate New York, uncovered. And because of that, there were a variety of issues. The acquaintance who refused to fly the aircraft noted airworthiness issues. And again, you don't have to be an expert to realize that these are issues that would keep you away from this airplane, either as a pilot or as a passenger. Damage from a hard landing. Apparently, there were some visible issues with the landing gear just from looking at the aircraft. water in the fuel tanks, hydraulic issues, specifically no fluid in the reservoir, and dry rot of the tires. And again, if you've been around tires, if you've been around machinery, and you walk up to something, it looks like it hasn't been maintained recently. If it's a car, you might hold your nose and get into it. If it's an airplane, turn around. And this was something where I presume, because this was a pilot who had over 1,000 hours, that the pilot was aware of. We don't know what the pilot was thinking, but we do know what the pilot did. The pilot, after seeing the airplane in the condition it was, after having someone he trusted tell him that this condition is not good enough for him to fly, even though the pilot was aware of the left engine backfiring on him before this accident, even after, this really jumped out at me. The accident was July 19th. The last maintenance was July 17th, 2 days before then. And the mechanic changed the sealer on the left and right wing de-ice boots near the fuel filler caps and an oil and filter change on both engines. Why is that important? Because when the mechanic changed the oil, he reported that it was, quote, black and nasty when he first changed it, and the filter was installed more than 2 years prior. He changed the oil two more times before it finally cleared up, and he signed off on the maintenance part of the logbook. Now, this is the other thing that jumped out at me. There was a filter that was installed more than 2 years prior. Now, John, I don't know how frequently a Beach Duke should have those oil filters change, but if you put a filter in an airplane, have it in there for 2 years, and for the last few months, the aircraft was basically sitting idle outside in a fairly cold part of the country, what problems would you not be surprised to see in this engine, not just with the oil system?
Well, both filters will start to disintegrate from lack of use. They don't last forever. So the fuel filter, the fuel will actually break down the filter and dissolve the material, because the material inside there is held together with a form of plastic. It's not plastic like we know, hard plastic, but it's a plastic film that holds the filter elements together. And there's paper elements inside the oil filter that will also disintegrate and clog. In both cases, the outcome is negative. 2 years on the filter change. It's supposed to be changed on every 100-hour inspection or annual, because this was a 91 airplane. It should have had a filter 11 months earlier. I don't know who did that work, but maybe he didn't have it done because the airplane was sitting idle. But in any event, the airplane wasn't maintained, and just changing the oil and putting gas in it and taking off is not going to be a wise decision. What did he do with the tires? I mean, we know the tires are subject to failure because we got all that cracking on them. They're old. The list of failures that this guy failed to heed to is unbelievable.
Now, for those of you watching the video version of this, we're putting some pictures on the screen from the investigation that shows pictures of the left and right fuel servo inlet screens. And I'm not a trained mechanic, but looking at this, it's pretty obvious to me that there is material on these inlet screens that was breaking down. You see what looks like crumbly surface of whatever the filter was, and some brown dust on the side of these servos. And again, I'm no expert when it comes to fuel systems, but when I think of fuel systems, I think of liquid. I don't think of particulate matter floating in that liquid. It can't be good for the engine. And John, looking at these photos, what does this say to you about the state of the fuel system of this aircraft?
Well, that's obvious that the fuel filters have disintegrated, right? And they've broken into chunks and are now floating through the fuel system. And that was probably evident to him as he was flying along in that two-hour flight before he had the accident. He had to have engine problems. The NTSB said that when they looked into the good engine with the borescope, the one that didn't fail, the number two valves indicated high temperatures. So he was having fuel mixture problems. So he must have had engines running erratically during the flight, but it sounds like he kept pushing on, trying to get to destination, which is another big no-no. when you have a problem like that, like any problem, you know, get it home-itis or get it to wherever you want it. I mean, you start having problems, you should be putting it on the ground. And he was probably troubleshooting it like crazy in the air, trying to nurse it along to destination. And that's never has a good outcome. So it's obvious from what the NTSB found, and just the visuals that they talk about, that it was fuel system contamination that led to the problems with that both engines.
We're going to take a short break now to meet one of Avemco's employees from their Frederick, Maryland office.
What's the best part of this job?
I would say just the amount of knowledge that I've been able to gather kind of about the GA industry in general. In the time that I've worked here, I feel like I've learned so much just from speaking with people on the phone, doing my everyday tasks in my job. We were able to do a grounds pool with a local CFI, which was super insightful. We lectured about 9 hours. I felt like I've learned so much.
Have you had an opportunity to fly the simulator you have here in the office?
Yes, I flew. I want to say we did at least 2 hours, I think, and then crashed, did some successful takeoffs and landings.
That's a good
the local pattern. So it was very cool to kind of get some insight into what our customers are doing, you know, on a day-to-day basis, the training they're doing.
So with that knowledge, did that give you a better understanding when you're talking to a prospective client?
Absolutely.
What their needs are?
Yes. I feel a lot more confident speaking to people because I kind of understand where they're coming from, the types of aircraft they're discussing, the types of training that we're discussing in terms of, you know, getting training discounts on there, asking, you know, have you got your private certificate? Have you completed the ground school portion? What have you done? So that's been, I would say, very helpful.
And now, back to the flight safety detectives.
From what we've been discussing, it's fairly evident that pilot decision-making played a role here. And one of the questions I had is, how much experience did this pilot have overall, roughly 1,100 hours, was actually certificated to fly in both Canada and the U.S.? So presumably this is a pilot who had gone the extra mile, at least as far as being able to fly in two different countries. But one of the things that stood out was that his total time, total experience in this aircraft model was about 46 hours. But the time that he had owned this aircraft, or the time that the aircraft had been flying with him being the owner, was about 32 hours. So I'm thinking to myself, outside of the times he flew it when he first bought it and the time he was flying back with this aircraft, how much real experience did he have flying this kind of aircraft? And during this time, although it might have been short, did the problem just manifest itself in his final flight, or did he have a hint that something might have been going on beforehand? That was not really addressed in this investigation or in the public docket.
You know, and it doesn't say anything. The witness statement, one of the witness statements talks about the hard landing and the landing gear didn't look right. But there's no indication that they ever did anything to determine the landing gear was serviceable. Right. So, I mean, he's lucky that it did come up and go down. Of course, coming up is not the big issue. If it doesn't come up, that's the better of the two. If it doesn't come down, that just complicates the landing big time. So the number of problems that this guy took off with is just defies common sense in any way, shape, or manner. And then to take two people with him, I'm at a loss for words.
And as far as the other two people on the airplane are concerned, there was nothing in the report that spoke about them. So typically, if there's someone in the aircraft who was a certificated pilot, they might mention that somewhere along the line. But he was the only person mentioned. So it begs another question. Who else was on this airplane? And that they know, did they know that this was essentially a test flight after the airplane had been sitting on the ground for months? Or at least not that many hours since it was wintertime was over. It was not very, there was not much information as to what exactly was the day-to-day history of this airplane leading up to the accident. But I can only surmise that he not only had getteritis, but he had the needs of the other two people on that airplane to deal with. I don't know what those needs were, and the NTSB didn't get into that. And another thing about decision-making in this situation, this is a twin-engine aircraft. Full disclosure, I've never flown a twin-engine aircraft. If you have a problem with a single-engine aircraft, it's a big, red flashing light emergency. I have to do something really quickly. I don't know what the thinking process is if you have two engines thinking, okay, this one's giving me trouble. I'm still getting a lot of thrust off the other one. Can I sort of like deal with the situation, balance it? Can I fly this thing with an engine shutdown? Which again, is something that any pilot who is certificated to fly these sort of aircraft have to demonstrate the ability to do. But there's very little in here that says that this pilot had extensive experience flying this model aircraft.
Or even a twin engine aircraft. There's no reference to that. So yes, if you have an engine failure on a twin engine aircraft, you have a lot more options than you have in a single engine. And this guy overflew a good airport to get to one with a long runway. So, and obviously the engine was in his mind at that point was performing enough that it would get him there. And he was descending on as well. So he had several things in his favor, diverting to a bigger airport with a longer runway. So, but that, given that, he shouldn't even been where he was. That engine had to be giving him trouble before that. He's just north of Pittsburgh. There's a million airports in that stretch. You know, essentially it's at that point when you're in western New York, northwestern New York, you're flying Route 90. And there's a whole bunch of airports along that route. I've driven that many, many times and flown it several. There's lots of places to put the airplane down, but he kept pushing, trying to get to Ohio.
And in the analysis portion of this report, they speak about, although they didn't say so in so many words, this was an unstabilized approach. It mentioned how he was going to this 9,000-foot runway, and after twice circling the approach end of the runway to the left while descending, he proceeded down the runway well above a normal glide path. A couple of things that says to me, this is not a straight-in approach. This is not an approach that was on a instrument glide path. And again, he did not have instrument rating, so I don't know how well he was, how experienced he was in using that kind of approach equipment. But they said the aircraft never touched down, and the aircraft made a pitch up and a turn to the left and descended into the ground. They presume that he was trying to make a single-engine go-around. And again, single-engine aircraft, there is no single-engine go-around. If your engine fails, you are not going to climb up again. But this was a twin-engine aircraft. There are specific procedures for how do you make a single-engine go-around. Obviously, the performance is not going to be as good as with two engines. And the left engine was the engine that had failed. So the issue there is, if you do nothing, you tend to have the left engine not having as much thrust, right engine going forward, right engine has thrust, it tends to turn the aircraft to the left and out of control, which was the case here. So it gets back to what we were saying earlier. What was going through this pilot's mind? And what sort of experience did this pilot have with this particular aircraft? No evidence here that he did anything in the time this airplane was laid up for the winter. Was he going to a sophisticated flight simulator and practicing basic procedures? Did he have an instructor who he spoke with or even flew with to go through basic emergency procedures or to refresh his memory with this sort of thing? Of course, he had the requisite checkboxes of, do you have your medical? Do you have the recent flight review? That was all good. But having the boxes checked is not the same thing as being able to use the knowledge when appropriate in a situation. In my opinion, the best decision he could have made would be to not take off at all, especially given that he had the word of a trusted fellow pilot who said, you know what, I'm not flying your airplane.
You know, that falls into what I talk about all the time at the end of the show, the pre-planning and the walk around of the airplane. When you show up at the airport, you should make sure that you're not going to push yourself into a corner. Because you came out to fly, don't have 100% expectation that you are going to fly. All right, do a good review of your airplane. If someone had done, all right, so this guy, whoever he is, has done a service for the rest of us. He's teaching us what you should not do. You should not do what he did. You come out to the airport and do a good review of your airplane. And if you had done that to this airplane, you would have found a number of reasons not to go flying that day. Things that needed to be done before you do any flying. But he didn't do that. He knew some of them. He probably didn't know all of them. I don't think he knew the problem with the fuel system. He knew the problem with the oiling system on the engines, but he thought that was behind him probably because he just bought 20 quarts of oil for them to flush his system with it. So he was aware of some of these problems, but he just ignored all the rest of them, thinking that, oh, the oil's fine now, we can go. Well, there's more to an engine than just the oiling system. All of us have to remember that when we show up to fly an airplane. If there's indications of things not being right, stop. Stop and get some people to look at it if you don't look at it yourself, if you don't know what you're looking at. Right? And just not take an airplane that's got all these multiple problems. It's looking to, in this case, not only kill yourself, but kill two other people.
Before we go to our second to last word, you know, this is a bit of a heavy show for us because we're talking about not only people dying, but avoidable deaths, in our opinion. This is our invitation to you to become a member of the YouTube channel. Not only will you get the regularly scheduled broadcasts like we have here, but you'll get to have sneak peeks of the shows before they come out and other benefits from being a member. So, you know, click on below, and if you feel like joining, please do so and help us out. And going to the second to last word, as I'm sitting here, I'm thinking, this is a pilot who had a community around him. Some of them might have been a professional community, the mechanics he's working with. They might have been someone who was both a fellow pilot and also a friend, presumably a friend, the person who suggests he didn't get on the airplane. And you also have the two people who he was flying with. We don't know who they are, but presumably these are people who knew the pilot. Any one of those had an opportunity to keep this from happening. And clearly his friend who was the pilot did step up and say, hey, I am not going to be a part of this unless you fix this airplane. This person ignored it. You had a mechanic who said, yeah, we flushed everything out of the system. But I have to think to myself, is there anything else this mechanic said that wasn't a part of the report? Or more importantly, anything else this mechanic could have said at that time or asked at that time to make this accident pilot think twice about what he's doing? And finally, there are the two people who are on the aircraft. Now, I don't know what experience they've had with airplanes, but most people don't really have an opportunity to fly in a private airplane like this was. And it might have been a great adventure for them. It's like, ooh, I'm going to be in a twin-engine airplane that my friend owns, and we're going to have a good time flying down to Ohio. Well, even in that case, even if you like this person, you've known them for years, you got to ask yourself, do I have a plan B? If I go to the airport and I get a funny feeling in my stomach, or I ask a question and I don't hear an answer I want to hear, do I have a plan B? Or am I going to be stuck here, let's say 500 miles away from home? You have a plan B, be it getting on a Greyhound bus, flying your own plane, or doing something else, you'll be less inclined to accept the situation without question.
Without a doubt. And for my last word, I'll do what I always do. All right, if you're going to go flying, you have to plan. Plan ahead before you get to the airport. Plan when you get there. Plan for the weather, where you are, where you're going, and what's in between. But also plan for the condition of the airplane. I haven't said that in 99% of my end last word, but the condition of the airplane is so damn important. And in this case, if you would review the records of this airplane, you probably wouldn't go. I think most of our pilots wouldn't go. So there was some kind of pressure on this individual to get the airplane to Ohio. Maybe it was going to be worked on there. Who knows? We don't know what he was thinking. But the point is, if there's things wrong with the airplane, don't go taking broken airplanes into the air. Don't be taking extra risk. right? So you do a good pre-flight, review all the records, you know, do everything you possibly can to make sure you can be comfortable with the airplane without any problems. And when you get into the air, put your head on the swivel, because we have so many people flying today, and it's very congested, and they're newbies. Many of them are newbies, and they're having their own set of problems. So we got to pay attention doubly in some airspace today. So please, please fly safely.
Thank you so much for listening to the show. We really value all of our listeners and subscribers. Our podcast gets ranked by you. So if you like this, give us 5 stars inside your podcast platform.
We want to keep the conversation going with you. So we'd love for you to engage with us on our social media channels. We're on Instagram, X, Facebook, LinkedIn, and of course, YouTube.
You can email the show at flightsafetodetexas@gmail.com. By the way, if you're watching this on YouTube, we're working on growing this channel, and it really helps if you all comment. So please do that. We read them all.
And be sure to subscribe.
Without the right insurance, you're Sierra Oscar Lima. Since 1961, Avemco Insurance Company has been known as the approachable experts of general aviation insurance. No other insurance company connects you directly to an aviation underwriter, giving you more flexibility, personalized service, and easy-to-read policies customized for you and your flying. Call 888-879-0389 for a free quote, or visit avemco.com/flightsafety. And don't forget to tell them you're a listener of our podcast and save 5%.
That's it for this episode of the Flight Safety Detectives. Until the next episode, fly safe.